Rabbi Shlomo Siegel, Wednesday, the 6th November, you to fill in the outside story. Hebrew date is Gimel Kislev, 22 days.
Thank you. When asked to speak this week, I was told there was already enough on the Parsha, so Halachi Kenyan. So I decided I'll pick something to do with tefillin. I then began to do a search to see if there was any connections to the Sedra. I found there's actually a very, very good connection to this week's Sedra. Chazal say that the others, they kept the whole Torah before it was given. But not necessarily in the way we think of it. And in this week's Sedra, we find the Yaakov Avinu kept the mitzvah tefillin. He didn't have the black boxes we have. He didn't have the four parashiyos we had. It was actually the whole story with Lavan, with the various sheep, the Nekodim, Verudim, etc., etc. When he took, he made the deal with Lavan that I'll take a very weak sheep, the Shvacha sheep, and the ones which are come out speckled, etc., etc., those will be mine. So what did he do? He took various sticks, and he peeled them, and he put them in the water troughs, and then we know the whole story that the Nisim, that's basically ended up with a very, very large number of sheep and sheep, etc. And the Zohar HaKadosh says that was, at a higher level, that was the kiyum of the mitzvah tefillin. Obviously, it's Alpi Kabbalah, it means. Perhaps if we have time at the end, we'll come back to it, but it's already sort of started slightly late. So I'll move straight into the Chelek of Halacha. But for the time being, we'll just assume it's something which is obviously to be understood Alpi Kabbalah. Now, what I'm going to speak about today, Be'ezus Hashem, is I think in the past there has been a talk of the halachos of tefillin with regard to putting them on, where you put them on, possibly even with regard to the halachos of the parashiyos. Today what I want to speak about is the outside story, i.e. the button themselves, the outside. Obviously when it comes to checking the parashiyos, that's the job for a magia. You give it to a competent magia, he opens them up, he checks the parashiyos, and that's not really very much, there's not that much for us to really speak about. But in terms of the button, there's everything to speak about, because that's something which a person can really, a lot of it you can check yourself. So check that they are, because before you even make the brachos, obviously they have to be kosher. So I will try, and I'm not particularly good with computers and things, so therefore I couldn't create any sort of slideshow or anything like that. But I've also been asked to try and make it relatively clear for anyone who's listening to this. So anyone who's got tefillin, I actually thought they were going to put a note on there for people to bring tefillin. If you've got tefillin, it may be helpful to have them in front of you. You'll see what I'm talking about. If not, I will hold up. I'll try and make it as clear as possible. When you take your batim, you take whether it's your shel yad, shel rosh, there's first thing to identify is the parts of the tefillin. There's actually four parts. I'm talking about the bias right now, before we come to the ritzuas. Before you come to the straps, there's the bias. What is the bias? You've got the ketzitza. The ketzitza is that top part where the parashiyos go into. That's the top square, the thing which sticks up. That is called the ketzitza. The ketzitza on the shel rosh, as we know, is made up of four parts. The ketzitza on the shel yad is made up of a single compartment. You've then got the thing on which it sits. The part on which it sits, the part below it, is called the titura. The titura, the Rishonim say in Menachos, one of the explanations, it's an expression of a bridge. It's a gesher, it's a bridge. And that's because, presumably, because it bridges over, if you have your tefillin upside down, you imagine the ketzitza upside down, there's a big hole there, through which the parashiyos go in. So this closes up that hole, that's like a bridge. And you've got the titura elyona, the upper part, and the titura tachtona, when it closes, they come together, and you form that titura. That's the titura. So you've got the ketzitza, and you've got the titura. The last part is the part at the back, which is called the ma'abarta. The ma'abarta is the bit which is actually added on after the titura goes in, as you can see here, it goes in and then back out, and it forms this back part where it's called the ma'abarta, an expression of like a tunnel, through which the ritzua, the strap, goes through. So those are the three parts. You've got the ketzitza, the titura, and the back part, the ma'abarta. Those are the three parts of the tefillin. Now, in times gone by, people may still have such tefillin. The tefillin were made from a number of pieces of leather. You'd the ketzitza and the titura were two parts, and one would be stuck into the other, and then they'd sew it up to create a single mass. Nowadays, a standard pair of tefillin, there's gusses, there's duckers, but nowadays most people get gusses, which is much thicker leather, it's of a big animal, hence the name gusses, and the tefillin is made from one, each bias is made from a single piece of leather. Now, that is a half truth. It's not quite a piece, a single piece of leather, because depending on how well it's been painted over and sewn up, how tight, you may not be able to see it, but there is actually another piece of leather. Because when you close it up, if you close it up, just literally you close the two parts of the tetura and you sew it up, you'll end up with a very skew-whiff tetura. What they do is they sandwich in another piece of leather in between the two parts of the tetura, and when it's sewn up, that makes it completely square. So there is actually an extra piece. There are those who are mahader. The first time I came across this, I went to a very, very big batimacher in Eretz Yisrael. And he told me there are those, he said, it's briskers who are mahader, to have literally what they call miksha achas. Literally one piece of leather. The whole thing is made from one piece of leather. He says, obviously, it costs a little bit more money because it's more of a skill to be able to make it, and literally with one piece of leather. Is there actually any hiddur in it? So there are people who are mahader. The truth is that I saw in a sefer from a big magia, actually, as happens to be a whole sefer on, and he describes it there as one of the biggest myths in the whole of Hilchas Stam, this idea of miksha achas. He says, where this hiddur comes from, there's no makor for it. He says, apparently when they asked Rabbi Yashiv about it, is there a hiddur in having miksha achas? Rabbi Yashiv looked up at them and he said, as far as I'm aware, miksha achas only exists by menorah, not by tefillin. There's no makor. But as he points out, he says, if you've already, you won't get miksha achas, it's highly unlikely you'll get it made by a factory. You can get tefillin, the batim which are made on a production line, literally in a factory, or you could go to a private batim macha. And generally, miksha achas, one piece. Miksha achas, yeah. I mean, it's the name given to it. It's not a, you won't find it anywhere in the Rishonim or anything like that. It's not a... Anyway, so if you go to... So the factory is made on a production line, and or you can buy it from a private batimacher, obviously, if you go to him to a reliable one. That's where you're more likely to be able to get it. And it, as this this Magia points out, he says, if he's already putting in the extra work, and the extra love, if you want, to make such a beautiful pair of tefillin, it probably will have other hidurim. So even if there isn't any hidur in terms of the miksha achas, the extra money you're paying may well give it various other hidurim. And he says, that is, by the way, a general rule. I know, again, when I went to this batimacher in Eretz Yisrael, there's Hashem later on in the show, I'll tell you why. It wasn't to buy a pair of tefillin at that time. But I don't think it was that time. And he said like this. He said, if you go to a factory, as you know, when they make the batim, they have to leave the leather to dry out. Because if it doesn't dry out, the whole thing would just get warped. He says, the longer it's left to dry out, the stronger it becomes, obviously up to a certain point, and it's less likely to warp at a later date. He says, it's left to dry out at different stages. They mold it a bit, and then they leave it to dry, etc., etc. He says, a typical factory, this is what he told me, would leave it to dry for a year. He says, his ones he leaves for 2 years. Which he says, I mean, he wasn't trying to sell me a pair at the time, I don't think, but he says, gives it the extra strength. As I said, at the time when you buy it, it may be perfectly square, but because of humidity and perspiration, etc., over time they can become warped if they're not dried out properly. So that is in terms of the way tefillin are made. Just to point out, in terms of when buying tefillin, so we mentioned the idea of a factory and a private batim macher. The hardest part, and this is where the real sort of hidurim come in, and that is the making of the shin. The shin on the shel rosh is about the hardest part, apparently, in making the tefillin. Because there's a halacha of, it's called chok toiches. There's a halacha in Safra, it's called chok toiches. It applies, if you have, let's say, give you an example, let's say you've got a blotch of ink dropped onto a piece of cloth. You are supposed to write there the letter, let's say, yud. Or the letter vav. Let's say the letter vav. But it's a blotch of ink. So instead of rubbing out the whole thing, what you do is you just erase it around it and you make it into a vav. No, it sounds pretty good. Instead of rubbing out the whole thing, just rub out the part and you give it the shape of the vav. You're not allowed to do that. You have to actively draw the letter, not create the letter from the sides by rubbing out the sides. The same halacha applies when creating the shin. So how are you going to make the shin? If you got, when they make the batim, they made it perfectly square, how are you going to get a shin protruding from the bias? The easiest way is obviously to take a mold, stick it on, a coin, and you, under high pressure, it will push the skin on the sides in, and it will force the automatically have a shin standing there at the end. That's kok toiches. So it's a real, real skill to be able to get this out. I'll just tell you very bekitzer, the way they generally do it is, they first actually do put a mold on, put it under high pressure, they get the shin, which is a completely possible shin, because of kok toiches. What they then do is, they then colour it in. This is before they've coloured it black. They colour it in green, whatever it is. And then they put it back in the press, under very high pressure, and make it completely flat again. And now all they're left with is a completely flat pair of a flat bias, with the shape of a shin. And now starts the work of using various tools to ply out the shin from within. Some use needles, there's all different ways, I wouldn't say all different ways, but there's various ways of doing it. Each have Midas and Chesrinus. And just remember, if they put these, some use, there's a certain hiddah they say, they use like pins to do it. But if you put the pin in too far, what's going to happen? It'll create a hole. And if it creates a hole, that's it, it's possible. Nothing you can do about it. Completely possible. Start again. And that's why they say the ones which are made with pins, which is supposedly is an extra hiddah, will be more expensive because they have to cover their losses. Because inevitably there are going to be times when it goes in. But as I said, that's not so much for us, because that's in terms of you're buying a pair of tefillin. Let's get towards now the actual checking of the tefillin, which is the practical side of it. The first thing is the ribu'ah of the tefillin. The tefillin have to be perfectly square. Now, perfectly square means the two parts which have to be perfectly square are the ketzitza, that top part, and the tituro, the thing on which it's sitting. Leave the ma'abarata out of it for the time being. Now, what does it mean square? Obviously, you can just measure one side, measure another side, measure all the sides. They're all exactly equal. Sounds like a square, but it's not. We know that obviously, just because all the sides are equal, it could be a parallelogram. You have to make sure that the things are all 90 degrees. So you can either get out a protractor, do that, or you can just use simple Pythagoras, measure two adjacent sides, then the diagonal. That would also give you the same thing. They have to be absolutely square. Always remember...
What do you measure with?
A ruler.
What divisions has it got? What divisions has it got?
Millimeters, if you want. As I said, I remember in North Hendon, when I became Bar Mitzvah, Rabbi Cooper, Zich Tzadik Levrocha, he used to, when Bar Mitzvah Bocha came to him to check the tefillin, he took out a ruler, he checked the sides exactly like that. He checked the sides, presumably he checked the diagonal, I don't remember exactly, but I think that's what he did. And that's how he chose. I believe he did find cases where it wasn't, and it had to be sent back to be squared off. So that's number one. Okay, generally when you buy them, they should have been checked. They say you do not have to start checking them with a caliper or anything like this, special implements to check down to the very, very minutest. We're not talking about that. By the same token, as I said, the titura is the same thing. The titura, the base underneath, same thing. The titura comes to, this is the part which is a little difficult, unless you've got tefillin in front of you, but the titura is the part on which the ketitza is sitting. So if I follow my hands round now, I'm going to follow around the titura down the side. If you draw the shape, you can see where my finger is going. It comes to a corner. It then goes in. Yeah, it goes in. And then it like curves back where the ma'abarata is. Okay? If you can't see it, take a look on your own tefillin, you'll see it. That's the way it goes. That part where it goes in is obviously the end of the titura. That's where you're measuring the square part. You don't include the ma'abarata. If you measure from the front to the back, including the ma'abarata, you won't get a square. You get a rectangle. So this point here, where it comes in, has to come to a point. After that, it can curve back, but it must come to a point. You can't have it a perfect U-shape, because otherwise that's not a square. And so this is a little difficult to explain, but take a look on the tuner, you'll see what I mean. That point where it goes in and then curves back on itself, it has to come to a point, and then it'll curve. That's the way they make the ma'abarata. But it can't be a complete U-shape, because then you don't have any points. It will ruin the ribu'ah of the tefillin. So that's the first point, is you measure in terms of the sides. Next thing is, the corners have to be relatively sharp. If you get a chip on one of the corners, it could be a corner of the titura, it could be a corner of the ketitza, obviously that will ruin the ribu'ah. Again, practically speaking, what happens over time is, as you put it on your skin, you put it on your head, the corners rub down a little bit, and they go they're not 100% sharp. But the halacha, all the posts can agree, that doesn't really matter. As long as it looks from a distance, you know, when you hold it at a normal distance, it looks relatively square and sharp, that's good enough. That is good enough. That's in terms of the squareness of the actual bias. Now, again, this is the first time I met this Batin Macha. Why did I go to him? It was because I was in yeshiva at the time, I was learning in Eretz Yisrael, and I noticed the corners of the, whichever part it was, were dulling a little bit. So I wanted to check that it was still fine. So I went down to this Batin Macha. He looks and he says, absolutely fine. But he turns over my tefillin, and he looks at the tefiras, the stitches, right? The stitches are made with gid, with sinew, and he says, that is a little problematic. Why is it problematic? You see, we've said so far, the actual bias, that's the ketitza, and the tefillah has to be perfectly square. True. The other part which has to be square is the tefiras. That means the tefiras have to lie parallel with the titura. It's all going to be perfectly square. But here comes the problem. That should have all been checked when it's made. Everything should have been checked. But here he told me, here's the thing. Now again, this is the part which you really need a pair of tefillin. Anyone who wants to, I'll show you afterwards on my tefillin what he did. Okay, you can come up and see afterwards. But it's like this. If you imagine the tefiras, how did the tefiras go? You got four sides to the tefiras. They come, you got, let's say, we'll talk of it in terms of going right to left, or let's say east to south and north to, sorry, east to west and north to south. Okay? East to west and north and south. Now, if you imagine you've got a piece of string coming across from east to west. Okay, so it comes across here. You then got a string going north to south. They both go through a common hole at a corner where they meet at 90 degrees. One is pulling down towards the south and one's pulling in the other direction towards, let's say, the west. So what's going to happen if they pull, if your hole is too big and you look at that, you'll look at it and you'll say, that's not square. Because the strings are pulling, the gid is pulling away from one another in different directions and it can look rounded. Now there's three shittas in the relatively Heinziger poskim as to how square it has to be at the corner. The most lenient is Rav Shmuel Vosner, and there are others who are like this. He says, as long as it looks relatively square, in other words, if you were to carry on the line, imagine that it wasn't pulled so tight, you were to carry it on, loosen it a little bit in both directions, and they would meet, you'd have a square, that's perfectly fine. That is the most lenient shitta. You then got the shitta of Rabbi Yashiv, quoted in Zichron Eliyahu, that's the safer on Batim. I say the Sefer on Batim. It's written by, together with somebody else, was written by Rav Morgenstern, the prime Talmud of the right-hand man of Rabbi Yashiv. And he says Rabbi Yashiv holds that if you continue one line, you can continue one line up. You continue one line up, if it meets the other one, that's good enough. You can't continue on both lines. That's the second shitter. Okay, so the first shitter is you can continue imaginary lines of both them. If they meet and you get a square, that's fine. Second shit is you continue one line, and if it meets the other one, that's perfectly fine. You can't continue both lines. The most machmir shitter is that of Rav Scheinberg, and this I heard from the Batim Macher. I remember him telling me it's Rav Scheinberg, and there are others as well, but Rabbi Yisrael Yaakov Fisher also held like this. They have to actually touch. They have to actually touch. So he said to me like this. This is what the Batim Macher said to me. He said, personally, I don't have a problem with your tefillin. I think I'd say they're fine. But he says, what can I do? Various big poskim like Rav Scheinberg have told me it's a problem. He says he doesn't know why the batim machers insist on making the hole so big. The whole idea of making the holes very as small as possible is so that the tefiras will touch. He says, but it's not a problem. He says, what you do is, and this is a poskim, and again you'll see beautiful diagrams of this in Zichron Eliyahu. What he then I can show you on the tefillin afterwards, you can come and you can see he's done it here. Is what they do is, and this is, I'll try and describe it. What you do is, where the two things come together, okay, so you've got it going east to west, and you've got it going north to south, and they come together at that corner. Before you put it tight, you take another piece of gid, loop it round the two, and tie the two together like that. Put it tight, and the two of them are then pulled in like that. Okay, they're like this. You pull them together so that they come tight, and then you tighten everything down. And what you will get is an absolutely perfect point at that corner. Okay? Now, the most interesting thing is, I know somebody who bought tefillin from him afterwards. After, I was quite impressed when I referred somebody to him. They bought the tefillin. He showed me his batim, had very small holes because of this reason, so everything should meet. And I saw the person's tefillin afterwards. Despite the very small holes, he'd done exactly that in certain places. He'd pulled the tefillin together with an extra piece. So even if you do have small holes, there's no guarantee. I remember going back to yeshiva afterwards, and there was somebody, a friend who was going to, he had some shayla with his tefillin, he was going to go there as well. I said to him, I'm telling you now, I looked at his tefillin, I said to him, I'm telling you, he's going to tell you exactly the same thing. He's going to tell you your tefillin are no good. And kachava, this person went, and he would tell one after the other. So I'm a little scared to say it up here, but if you actually take a look, he would probably tell you a lot of the tefillin we get in Chutz La'aretz. I don't know why dafka Chutz La'aretz, but they ideally should be come together. To be honest, it seems most people are not makpid on this. It seems that either they take on, like Rav Shmuel Vosner, or like Rabbi Yashiv, But for those who are getting them sewn up again, it's a hiddur to have them, everything come together. Whether you have to start getting them sort of redone, because in order to redo the tefillos, everything has to be opened up, understandably. Because the tefillos go through everything, the whole thing. So, well, you can ask your own place. I think you'll find that generally people are not makbid on this. That's in terms of the rebuah on the tefillos. Next thing is a very common problem is you get cracks in the tefillin. There's two sorts of cracks. I'm talking about in the bias, you get all sorts of cracks. You can get cracks, which are just simple, be all sorts of different, it can be downwards, across, diagonal, and that is very simply, the reason why there are cracks there is because when they mould the tefillin, you get all sorts of folds, and what they do is in order to try and even out the folds, they add a little bit of glue. And over time, the glue sort of contracts a little bit, and because you end up with cracks. That's absolutely fine. People don't get cracks. The only reason you don't get cracks is because the paint's very thick. Kimat everyone has cracks underneath the paint. That's just the metzias. There's another type of crack, and that is where it will be a horizontal crack. That's where it's being closed. Now, understandably, where it's being closed, there's a lot of pressure. The tefillah is still trying to open up, and all you've got holding it closed is your tefillah, is the stitches. So therefore, over time, it can, again, open up a little bit, you get a very, very slight crack. It doesn't puzzle up the tefillin. As long as everything's still aligned, it will not puzzle up the tefillin. Depending on how big the crack is, if you don't drop it in water or anything like that, it probably will also survive. The reason why some people do not get cracks is because they add glue. There are different shittas about the glue, but again, I'm going to stick, because we don't have much time left, I'm going to stick to what you can actually check yourself. Very good, unintended pun. But there are different shittas about whether you can use glue. The Chazon Ish held you couldn't use any glue whatsoever. In terms of it, holding it closed, the Mishnah Berurah doesn't seem very bothered about it. There are shit in between as well of the Eben Yisrael, Rabbi Yisrael Yaakov Fisher. But again, that's more when you're actually going to a Bata Macha, you can ask him for that sort of information. Again, just very briefly, but again, this is not so much what you're going to be checking. In terms of the Charitzim, that's on the Shel Rosh, you'll see obviously where the four compartments are. You should be able to actually see where one compartment ends and the next one begins. That's called the charitzim. That's the, like, the ditches, if you want, the grooves in between one and the other. Just one thing is, again, this is to do with the gluing. How are they held together? What keeps it square? Again, there's different shitters. The Gon, the Shaigas Ari, various others, they hold that you can't use any glue in between. Which is not so, you'll find most fillings are not made without glue at all nowadays, told, because because of humidity and everything, it'll go out of shape. So what they do is they use a certain amount of glue. How much glue, there are different shitters to whether how much glue you can use. But it should not be glued all the way around. But again, that's something which you can only really get checked by a batamacha. What they do is they take like a knife, and they put a knife in between, and they can see whether they are divided. The fact that it's all very tight together is only because it's been put under very, very high pressure. It's not because it's necessarily glued. But sometimes it's put, and this is something, again, it's a batamacha's job to check this, but it's apparently a lot of tefillin have been found to have this problem. And that is like this. Because they put it under very, very high pressure, what happens is, before they paint the shel rosh, you can't actually see you can't see the grooves very well. What they then do is they then paint it, and the paint is quite thick. Once it's been painted, you can't see the grooves at all. So what the batim makar does is, he just makes his own grooves on the outside. It's what they call charitzim mezuyofas. It means they are fake grooves, and it's absolutely possible. And again, that can be checked apparently within 1 or 2 minutes, a batim makar can check that for you. And if it is, all he does, he'll redo it. It's not a problem. The grooves have to be in line with where the anyone who's got, and again, this is at the bottom of the sort of the separate compartments, sometimes they actually pass the gid through there. There's various reasons for doing it. One of the reasons for doing it is to actually show that the compartments are separate. But I said that's, again, not something you're going to be checking yourself. Next thing is, when it comes to the button being black, you see a lot of people, this is just a simple data, you see a lot of people, they notice a bit which is not black, so they start getting these markers out, start painting it, then another spot and another spot. By the end of it, they've got a very blotchy bias. This batimacher said, he says, let me give you a piece of advice. He said, if you've got a tiny little bit, just the corner which needs to be painted, he says, fine, use the marker. He says, if you've got anything bigger than that, take it to a batimacher, because the paints you get in these markers are not really made, he said, are not really made for the batim. And all it does is it makes it all blotchy, because it's not the same colour as the paint they use. And he says it takes away from the hiddur. It's not advisable. If you've got a bigger spot, take it to a batimacher. It's not a big job. They can repaint it. When it comes to the... halacha l'maaseh, by the way, if it's not completely black, it's not necessarily possible with the batim. The shayla is whether it's just because of beauty, lanoi, whether it's a minhag. Again, we are knowing, obviously we do blacken it, but it's not necessarily the end of the world. Where it's more important is when it comes to the ritzuas. The ritzuas is halakha l'moshe m'Sinai that it's got to be black. The ritzuas, by the way, make sure you get a, obviously, doesn't need me to say this, but make sure you get a ritzuas with a good hechsher. Again, as I've seen in the Sefer, he warns, you can get very cheap ritzuas. He said that absolutely possible. There was a whole, that taka was with a hechsher, but there was a whole thing in America with bond leather. You obviously, that was taka a mistake in that case. It was a misunderstanding. But there are people who are around who are making them without any ibud lishmor. It's being made by goyim and things. Make sure it's got a good hechsher. In terms of the being black, so it's like this. There are two tzedakim to be makel. That is, Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, he likes both of them. And that is number one, Ruba Kekulei. He says, if you've got the majority of the ritzuas, the majority of the straps is black, that's good enough. For the majority, that's good enough. Number two, he says, we've got very, very long straps. They don't have to be that long. No, the straps don't have to be that long. He says, once you've got the straps go longer than the minimum length, after that, it doesn't matter if they're not black. So those are two stodim to be made. If it's beyond the minimum shear, which for the shelyads, the minimum shear, by the way, is the length. It's not to do seven times round your arm. It's if you were to take it, once you've tightened it, you were to take it down to your middle finger, wrap around three times, that's the minimum length. So obviously, depending on how tall you are, how long your arms are, that will vary. In terms of the shel rosh, depending whether it's Reb Chaim, no, it's somewhere in between 16 and about 20 centimeters. But anything beyond that, he says, it's not ma'akev if it's not black. The Mishnah Berurah seemingly did not accept either of these arguments. And the general consensus of the poskim is we can't really just be machria against the Mishnah Berurah. Even though there is reliable testimony that, I'm not going to say by name, but various gedolim, people have seen their ritzuos, and they were clearly not particularly makbid about them being black right to the end and things like that. So there is, a person doesn't have to get too panicky about it if he doesn't have a pen, if it doesn't go black, right, if it's not black all the way to the end. Just another couple of points, and with that we'll end. That is, number one, just that we mentioned the length of the ritzuah, something very, very important to bear in mind is there is a minimum width for a ritzuah. The minimum width is about 9 to 11 millimetres, depending on which shear you take. Why do I say that? It's because of this. In certain places, it's going to stretch. Especially if you look on the shelyad, for example, on the shelyad, where it passes through and you tighten it, look what happens. If you can see from here, again, it stretches and it curls. Curling doesn't make a difference. Curling, you just straighten out. You've got to make sure it doesn't go below 9 to 11 millimetres. If it does, you need new ritzuos. It'll be possible at that stage. In terms of the black ritzuos being black on both sides, what is the maida of having it? Is there a maida? Is a matter hotly debated. Just very, very bekitzer. The Rambam shitta is, the Rambam is the one who holds that it has to be black on all sides, top and bottom. It was never accepted la'alocha, the Beis Yosef says it was never ever accepted la'alocha. So most people, no one was ever makpid to have black on the other side. The one thing you will find some people is they have black on the sides. That's because Rav Shlomo Ganzfried, in his Sefer Kesser Sofer, which is one of the very ongenommen sforim that's the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, by the way, in terms of Hilchos Tam, he held it had to be black on the sides as well. That was his shitter, but again, the accepted practice is just black on the top. There are a lot of people you'll see nowadays, they've started taking black on the other side, it's because it's been, so there are various milers in it, but a lot of people are against it. Okay, it's not for here and now, why, the pros and cons of it. Finally, I'll just end with this, and that is, in terms of the shalyad, the yud of the shalyad has to be up against the bias. This is a zayah, it's based on a zayah. Now, there are three ways of doing this. Okay, the stipler, for example, he was of the opinion it doesn't actually have to touch the bias. It's good enough if it's near the bias. And that's based on, for those people who hold the same thing with the shel rosh. The shel rosh they hold, it doesn't have to be bang in the middle. You don't have to start using a mirror. We know there's a big machlokes between the chassidim and the litvaks about this. Rabbi Yashiv said he'd rather use a mirror than be a karkafta de le monach bot tefillin. He held it had to be bang in the middle. Okay. Others held, no, it's better not to use a mirror, it doesn't matter, but by the way, there's absolutely no justification. You see, I've told people about this, and I see again and again, they obviously just don't adjust their tefillin. Their tefillin are completely skew with, there's no deal which would hold it's any good. Okay, even if you rely on this shit, it doesn't have to bang in the middle, it means it doesn't have to bang in the middle, it doesn't mean it can be completely offline. When it comes to the yud, as I said, the other yud doesn't have to touch completely. Those yud that does have to touch completely, there are two ways of doing it. Touch the bias. Tashi the Titura, the bias, the yod, not for the side. Yeah. The yod of the Ritzua. Yeah. So there are two ways of doing this. Most people probably have it done with a gid or a piece of plastic tied round and make sure it's been done in the right way, it doesn't form a chatzitza. Again, we've run out of time, I can't explain how that is. But because it's got to be done in the right way. When I took my tefillin to this batim macher, he gave them back to me and there was no gid. I said, where's the gid? He said, no, we don't do it with gid because the Talmidim of the Chazon Ish, they hold you don't use gid. Why not? Because the Chazon Ish holds there's no mention of an inyan of gid, not in the Gemara, not in the Rishonim. You can't start being machadish your own sort of ideas. So what do they use? They use a piece of cloth. They jam into the Ma'abarta a piece of cloth, and that supposedly holds the Ritzua in place. Fine. Okay, I accepted that, it went away. But I found over time it started slipping. So I said, I'm going back to my gids. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, gids good enough. I actually found out afterwards that, again, Zichron Eliyahu, they point out it's a big kasha on the Chazon Ish. Because, true, there's no Masorah for having gids. Where's the Masorah for having cloth? You also won't find that in the Rishonim. And because of that, despite the most interesting thing is Reb Chaim Kanievsky, the stipler, they all had gids. Despite the fact they followed the Chazon Ish on everything, again, from a reliable source, they had gids. So again, whichever way you do it, you've got what to rely upon. And with that, as I said, bring it to an end.